There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I'd like to talk to you about a couple of things. One being Super Draft. Great new way to play daily fantasy sports. Some listeners are starting to jump on from the Quick Hit Show, from Always Pressing, or hopefully from Benched with Bubba. It is a blast. You play the players you want. There are no prices. It's that simple. It's a multiplier point system. The riskier the guy, the more points he usually gets. It's tons and tons of fun. Always tons of overlay. Free money if you're doing well. It's a great time. When you sign up and you create your account, use promo code Bubba so they know where you created your account from. And when you make your first deposit, you get a free $10 deposit bonus. So go to Superdraft in your app store, use promo code Bubba, get a free $10 deposit bonus, and have fun. Check us out in the Fantasy Degen Slack chat. Always breaking down prices over there on Superdraft. Also, if you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd really, really appreciate it. It's been a blast doing Bench with Bubba for another fantasy baseball season. And we look forward to doing it again next season. But a rating review would help a ton. But now, to Bench with Bubba episode 215. Bubba and the Batflip 9, as Toby and I talk about our lessons learned from the fantasy baseball season, drafting-wise and team-wise at least. And then fantasy all-stars, fantasy awards. Tons of just have fun, relaxing talk before we get deep into it again next week. So hope you guys have a good time, and a rating review would be great. But on to episode 215. Back everybody to Bubba and the Bat Flip episode 9, edition 9, whatever you like to call it. I'm on Twitter at BDintric, and the Bat Flip portion of Bubba and the Bat Flip, you can find me on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how are we doing, man?
We're doing pretty good, Bubba. Season is over. I just want to say though, man, I missed you. It's been a few weeks. We had like power outages and injuries, and you know, but we're back, and it's exciting to be on with you again.
Yep, it's good to be doing it again. It's been a couple weeks off, but you know, life gets in the way. It happens. It's good, and we're gonna power you guys through the off season. We're gonna try to get you as often as we can, do different things to recap seasons, to get you ready for next season. Tonight, we're gonna recap our seasons and then talk about just like fantasy all stars and kind of the big players of the fantasy baseball season and how we saw fit. If it was just they were that awesome, or they provided value, or whatnot. We'll go through all of that, but Toby was in a boatload of leagues, so we're going to have some fun here. And he did very, very well, much better than I did in my leagues. But we'll start with the one league that we have kind of together. We were in different leagues, but the overall we can compare, and that's TGFBI. Toby, you were in the Champions League, so I'll let you take over and go there first. How did things fare in the Champions League of just a bunch of beasts that you drafted with?
Oh man, well it was a blast first and foremost. I mean, playing in the Champions League, just an incredible group of players. Every single person was just it was a lot of fun to kind of test yourself against some of the best in the industry. You know, and TGFBI just in general is a great place to do that. So Kenyatta Storin ended up winning. He finished 15th overall. He won with 114.5 points. It was nuts the last like 2 weeks. Yeah, I think three different teams had the lead at different points during the last few weeks. There was a point in time when it was like 111.5 to 111 to 110.5 for the top three. But then in the end, Kenyatta ended up winning, and he was solid throughout. I think he was always at the top, and then towards the last half of the year, he was really at the top for most of it. Went through a little bit of a lull, but I think as you'll find with a lot of fantasy league, there's a lot of ebb and flow, you know, to them. James Anderson put up an incredible fight towards the end. He came back from, I think he was around 50th overall with maybe like a month and a half to go. He finished actually as the highest with the highest overall rank at 11. And he had Garrett Cole and Jacob DeGrom down the stretch, which was just insane. Like what a combination and what drafting like from a pitching perspective for him. So really great. I finished third at 108 points. So a ways behind, I had a chance and my offense just could not get it going. I just like couldn't get my offense going that last month of the season. Like I sit here and it's so painful because I really wanted to win this league. It was a huge lead. I had 1,086 runs, and then it's like 1,089, 1,090, 1,098, 1,099. There's like 4 points just sitting there within like 10 runs, you know, but that's the story for a lot of guys. It was a lot of fun. A bunch of us finished in the top 50. Eddie Almaguer actually finished higher with an overall rank with me, 107.5. He also had a kid. He had a baby girl, I think, Wall, in the last couple weeks. So congratulations to him. That's quite a feat, both of those. And then Clay finished top 50 as well. So just a really an awesome time, a fun time. Congrats to Kenyatta. Congrats to everybody who performed really well. James really put on an awesome show towards the end there. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. How about you? How did League Two, right? You guys had a super competitive.
Yep. Yeah. League Two was wild. Like it was Kenneth Lee ended up taking it down with 123 points, but it was crazy because he started out the year and just blasted everybody out of the water. We thought it was an easy show for Kenneth Lee, and he got a fight towards the end. My team finished fourth, 35th overall with 107 points. Ooh. In our league. Nice. It was crazy because at one point I was as high as second this year. Then I fell down to like ninth with some injuries, worked back up to as high as second again. I was coasting pretty good in third. Brock Miller finished second. Brock was all the way. He got into first place on Friday, and then it fell back to Kenneth Lee on the weekend. Brock finished with 119 points. He put one of the best fights I've ever seen. But Kenneth kept fighting. Kenneth had all kinds of money at the end to spend, which was huge for him. But Greg Smith, Greg Sauce, who you know at Greg Sauce on Twitter from the Barf League, this dude finished third with 110 points. He had a 7-point swing on Sunday. And that's what got me out of third place. He just went bananas. Like, I was overall 35th. He was overall 36th. He made a lot. Like, over the last 2 weeks, I didn't have Fab for, like, the last 3 weeks. With some of the bids I had made towards the end, I might as well not have Fab for, like, a month or so. There were a couple of $1 shots in the dark. Greg used his leftover Fab to his advantage, and he moved up, like, from 6th or 7th and moved all the way up to, like, 3rd. So it was really, really good for Greg Smith. Super competitive league. It looked like it was going to be a runaway for a while and turned out to be pretty good up and down. But I was just happy with it because last year's performance, my team struggled tremendously to get up to almost finish in top two but get 35th overall. I'll take that every day of the week. So I'm pretty happy with that situation for sure. So yeah, it was good in the TGFBI. Hopefully we can continue it going on. Next year is going to be awesome in League Three. I can't wait to see what new people we get to play with. It was awesome to see Todd Zola of RotoWire. RotoWire's 2-for-2 now. Todd Zola takes it down. He had a heck of a season. A lot of great finishes in the top of TGFBI, but it was good to see. And Justin Mason did it again. So it was pretty awesome and looking forward to year three. All right. Let's talk NFBC. You had a boatload of teams. So why don't you run us through what you had going on there in NFBC?
All right. So the my best finish was I won my main event that I was in, which was, it was brutal down to the line because I finished ninth overall. So out of, I think, 575 or 570 people. So I feel really good about that. You know, it's obviously incredibly tough competition. And so for being my first year doing NFBC, you know, it feels good to have that win and to show a little bit about, you know, the fact that I can play, that I can play. But it was tough towards the end. I mean, it ended up being 127.5 to 123.5. I finished ninth overall, and the guy behind me finished 18th overall, which is kind of brutal. I think there's 35 teams. So to finish 18th overall and not necessarily get a W is a little bit tough for the guy who was following me. His name is Doug Cassidy. I don't think he's on Twitter, or at least active on Twitter, but he put in an incredible effort and was really kind of, you know, he was just nipping at my tail the whole last month of the season, even went in front for a little bit, but I ended up pulling that out. So that was really nice. That one felt really good. And then to finish ninth overall was awesome. In my other main event, I finished fifth. Brian Rudd from Baseball HQ won that. He's a terrific player. A lot of really good players in that league. Brian won with 122.5 points, followed by Gino Yu and then Bradley Libros, who is a really good NFBC player as well. Just some great names in that league. I finished fifth. I blame my draft. I just really had a bad I had a bad draft. I started Sale Bauer, and then I went Adalberto Mondesi, who was good when he played, but he was just out so much. Then Puig, who was fine, but a little bit of a disappointment. And then Daniel Murphy, Will Myers. Just a really ugly start to the draft. And so I'm a little proud that I was able to, you know, finish fairly high up in that league. But again, kudos to Brian Rudd. He's a tough guy to compete against, and he's just a really great player. So hats off to him. In my other leagues, I had four online championships, which are 12 team leagues. I finished second, third, and third in my one league that I share with my buddy, Andrew Matney. We finished 77th overall. I think there's like, I don't know, 1,500 or 2,000 teams. So that was pretty good, but it wasn't good enough for first place in that league. We finished, I think, 3 points behind. 2.5 points behind. We were in the lead with like 3 days left. We had a rampage towards the end there where we got really close, but weren't able to get it close enough. And then the other one was a little bit of a heartbreaker. It was a solo league I had, and I lost by what I lose by. In the end, it was 1 point. So that was tough. I lost it in RBI too on the last day by like three. So that was tough. The two, three, third place finishes, I was never really in that close. I missed out on second by 1 point. And then I won a DC 97th overall out of like 2,000 or 3,000 teams, which was pretty good too. So won that one, third, fifth, and 12th in the other one. So overall, like I was pretty satisfied with the season because of the main event finish. I would have liked to finish first in more of the leagues. You know, two out of whatever I have, 11 on here, is good, but it's not necessarily like I want to win. So whatever, but it's tough. It's tough competition. So that's kind of how I fared in the NFBC. How did you do in your other leagues?
Yeah, those are some awesome finishes. I wouldn't be too bummed out on that. That's for sure. A few others I was in. I was in the fake teams on Twitter. Their website, faketeams.com. They put together a fake teams and friends 15 team rotowire or rotisserie similar to like TGFBI format. I ended up finishing sixth. Another team where just injuries crushed me. I was second for like two thirds of the season, just outside of first. And then just the injury bug just dismantled me in a hurry. It was ugly early and often in that league. So like when you lose Josh Bell for a while, that got me in TGFBI too. That was bad. But like Giancarlo, Ryan Zimmerman, those guys were on for a while. I know they're not great plays, but being on the IL for quite some time. And then when Matthew Boyd blows up and those kind of guys really, really takes things away in a 15-team league and makes you drown out pretty quickly. So that part is really, really rough. So yeah, fake teams finished sixth there. Injuries got the best of me and it kind of sucked. I battled back to get to six, but that was a rough go. I took over a dead dynasty league with Ditka and Sausage Boys from Razzball. I knew it wasn't going to be any good. I traded everything I could and reloaded. So that's got a couple years to go, most likely. The Quant Edge, we had a head-to-head league, finished second there. I was first, dominating all year, lost in the championship game 6-4. That's why I hate head-to-head. So
No head-to-head.
It's the only head-to-head I was in, and I didn't want it to be head-to-head. Trust me on that one. And then Barf. Barf was my last league, and I know you were in Barf as well. Mm. And that was a fun finish. Joe G finished first there, which is awesome to see. Sammy finished second. Sammy Reed almost got his second title in a row. You finished third. Thorburn fourth. Eno fifth. Greg Sauce, same guy from TGFBI, got sixth. Kang seventh. Giants Homer eighth. I got ninth. That was one where I told you guys a couple weeks ago, my whole strategy of pitching completely backfired on me. Yeah. And then that crushed me because my offense wasn't horrible. It wasn't great, but the pitching, my whole strategy there just destroyed me. But so I finished ninth there. We'll definitely have to redo things because hitting-wise, it wasn't that bad. Pitching-wise, it was rough. You finished third, though.
Yeah. That was a tough one. I felt like I could never really get going on a consistent basis in Barf for some reason. Like I was winning at different points in the season. I think around mid season, it was such an interesting league. It was like Doug Thorburn, myself, Sammy, and then Joe, who ended up winning the league, and then Greg Smith. He was also like, it was kind of five teams that were just kind of juggling and going through these rotations in the pecking order. And I just couldn't get it going. I think Sammy is a great player. Joe's a great player. They dominated. I'm a little frustrated at myself in this league because I feel like I never made the adjustments that I needed to make. Like I finished very low in OBP and, I didn't pay enough attention to that category, which could have been, changed like pretty quickly, but it was all just bad. Like I was down in stolen bases. I drafted poorly. I drafted Trevor Bauer in the second round and that really hurt me a lot. Like when he was really struggling. And so even with Jacob deGrom to anchor the staff, it was still kind of tough. And I didn't draft super well and I wasn't able to get the guys that I needed to. One that stands out is John Birdie. Like I could never get stolen bases going. And for some reason I had him as like the fourth or fifth conditional bid on the week that he was going in a lot of leagues. I hadn't picked him up earlier than that for some reason. And that could have made a huge difference. But in the end, Sammy played great. Joe played awesome. And Joe just dominated down the stretch. I mean, the last month, maybe 3 weeks, he really kind of outpaced us by a little bit. And so hats off to him. I'm excited to kind of get back to the draft room. That was such a fun experience. My first live draft to meet all the guys who were so welcoming. Thank you to Justin for kind of inviting me and letting me participate in that. That was just awesome. I'm really looking forward to next year and giving Joe a run for his money again.
Yeah, it'll be fun because we're definitely going to do a live draft, get together, do that all again. So it'll be a ton of fun there with Mason and company. A lot of good dudes in that. Let's talk about a couple lessons we learned from the season before we get into our All-Stars and awards. One thing you wanted to talk about, and it sounds like a common theme through some of your drafts, is the draft-wise situation. What did you learn, per se, draft-wise in your overall success?
Well, I mean, I feel like there's so many lessons that I'm just kind of stewing over a little bit. And again, it's always hard when you're this close to the season to determine what is actionable stuff, and what was just luck of the draw. We were joking around about it before, on the call, but my team that won the main event that finished ninth overall, I did a terrible job drafting in that one too. So if anybody is going to believe any of my draft advice heading into next season, please, please don't. But, you know, I started that. So number one is that you can make mistakes, right? You can overcome mistakes as long as you find values later on in the draft. And obviously easier said than done. But, you know, in my main event league, my first 10 picks were Garrett Cole, who was amazing. Blake Snell, bust. Andrew Benintendi, pretty much a bust. Anthony Rendon was awesome. Eddie Rosario was great. Will Myers, a little bit of a bust. Nelson Cruz was awesome. But then Wade Davis, not good. Justin Upton, terrible. And then Yoan Moncada. So I essentially made up the mistakes that I made earlier in the draft, later on with some values. But I joked around with you, like my pitching staff, like the only decent pitchers that I ended up drafting were like Cole, and then I picked up Lucas Giolito on the waiver wire, but him and Minor were really like the only starting pitcher studs. And then Alex Colomé was kind of a staple in my lineup for the whole season. But I was able to add like Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito, and then a bunch of other guys who kind of fit in for it. So I just think it goes to show that you can make mistakes. I think a lot of times we focus so much energy around the draft, and for good reason. But in the end, you know, like if you can find some values, you can make some mistakes. And then working the waiver wire, especially with the injury situation like it is, especially with like data the way it is, really, where you have guys who are utilizing advanced analytics to hit the ball in the air more, like to identify gaps in their swing and who can make jump value wise, like you can definitely make mistakes. I've got a bunch of them that I can go off on for a while, but what are some of the ones that you identified as well?
Yeah, the drafting is one thing. Is people need to remember it's such a grind, it's such a long season that you have to be like diligent. That's one thing that I admire about guys like yourself. And you know, you got Scott Jensted. He's one of the biggest grinders I know, and Vlad, and so many of those guys. There's too many to mention. Like everyone that finishes well grinds their rear end off in this system we have. But the fab system, it's a lot of work. You got to be willing to go super deep, have multiple options out there, play with the pricing, find a way to save it. Because that was one of the biggest things I did. Running out of fab cost me finishing maybe second in TGI League. Finishing fourth was still. It was nice. Finishing 35th overall is nice, but what could have been type thing is if you do it, because you know you're not going to win a team on draft day. I wouldn't even say you're going to lose it. Like football, you might lose it on draft day because it's so quick. But baseball, you got so much time. Like I'm looking back at my TGFBI league, and almost my bottom half of my drafts wasn't even on my team outside of Max Kepler in round 17, Josh Bell in round 18, and like Ryan McMahon in round 27. Pretty much everybody else from around like 13 or 12 and below wasn't really involved in my final roster. Like it's pretty crazy. I had so much mixing and matching. You just got to hit the value where you hit it and just be super active on the waiver wire. But like, don't go crazy. I think that Fabapalooza, that's something that's going to be fun to look back on, and people that spent a lot there to see how that ended up than others. Cause somehow I didn't get any of the big prospects. I know you got Cole Tucker. How do you think that affected your overall situation?
Yeah, you know, I think it was big. I think that's one of the things that I take away too, is if you're going to make a big bid, like at least make sure that it's for an elite level prospect or some sort of elite level talent, because that ended up hurting me a lot. I mean, I did a decent job of managing Fab down the stretch in my leagues, and I had a decent amount. And I feel like this year more than others that I've seen, like people have blown their fab pretty early on. And so I was in a good position in a lot of leagues, but I actually think like I made a mistake towards the end. In the second to last week, I spent a bunch of fab, probably more than I needed to make sure that I got some guys that I wanted. And as a result, I wasn't in a dominant position the last week of the season. And I had a tweet where I was like, I think I might have played this last week wrong. And I got super lucky because the guy behind me did not end up turning. You know, I think he had like, you know, like 11 starts on the week, and I ended up having like six or seven, and he wasn't able to turn that into more wins than I had. I actually ended up with more wins than him by a couple on the week. And so, you know, I could have been in a really bad place if the chips had fallen in a little bit of a different way. And so I think making sure that you have a decent amount of fab towards the end, especially in a position like where you can dominate towards the end, because so many points can be gained and lost in that last week when there's so much uncertainty about who's going to pitch and who's not going to be there, that you really need to have a lot of options that you can go to. But then I think that Cole Tucker bid, it was a terrible bid. Like, it was literally like a Sunday night. I had flown earlier in the day. I was in Atlanta. I was literally putting in the bids in the back of a taxi. And I was like, it was the first big prospect to come up. I like really wanted him. He had played well in the first two games. And so it was just like really not a very rational play on my end. And it cost down the road because like I wasn't in the running, you know, for guys like, you know, Yordan Alvarez, who everybody knew was going to be a guy who came up and kind of hit, maybe not as well as he did, but just not being in a position to really take advantage or to make a bunch of those like $25 to $50 bids that, you know, that can really make or break your team, because those are the bids that I put in for like Hunter Dozier or Lucas Giolito early in the season that ended up panning out. And so I think just being a little bit more moderate and tempered in how I spend my fab and making sure that I have a decent reserve for down the stretch, because it can really put you in a position to succeed that last month of the season if you can dominate the guys that are ahead of you.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's one thing for sure. I know one thing you want to talk about is paying for closers. And that was a big discussion going into last year's draft. It was like, okay, you know, we saw the big years from Edwin Diaz and Kenley Jansen and all those kind of guys. Like, do you pay for that or you try to take the value? And it was like you're either on one side or the other. Like, that's what it were, where most conversations were for people discussing it. And I was on one that I usually wait. Like, I did my draft, and looking back on it, I had a Felipe Vasquez in round 7 and Jose Alvarado, who I was huge on in round 11. And that was a massive bummer. So those are my two closers. And that just went out the window. I had Felipe Vasquez, who kind of turned it on towards the end before all his bad stuff happened. And I hope we never see him again. But he's gone. What got lucky for me, which got me a lot of ground when I fell so far, I finished 6th in saves with 63 saves. But all things considered, with Alvarado and Vasquez out the gate, I was lucky enough to get Liam Hendricks. That was tremendous for me. Mm-hmm. That's a lucky one. It's a weird thing. I wanted to bring it up because there were so many different waiver wires. Like, I remember one time I had two different Rays closers. I think we talked one time, there was like three options, and I had two of the three, and it wasn't the right one. And then there's always teams with different options out there. We know Will Smith was a late draft pick that was huge. You can find saves, basically. How would you, like, I'm pretty much going to wait. I don't want to wait too long because in the two early mocks, they still went faster than I thought they would. But just looking at the saves landscape this year and trying not to overreact like most of us will, how do you think, you know, going into a draft, you mentioned don't pay for closers. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that like on a year-to-year basis, we've seen that there's just a ton of variance in reliever performance. They're working with smaller samples. And it's really hard when you draft them high for them to return value. Now, taking a couple steps backward, like each league is different, right? And when I give my analysis, a lot of times it's coming from the 15-team kind of NFBC-centric vantage point. And so each league is going to be different, like depending, you know, like points leagues are going to be different, so on and so forth. But for me, like I never, it's not like a hard and fast rule, but I generally don't draft a closer in the top, you know, 100. Like this year I was targeting guys like, essentially, whoever was in that second tier of closers that had some guarantee that they were pitching, you know, that they were going to be in the closer role, but maybe weren't like the most sought after player, like had some injury history. Like I ended up with Sean Doolittle. I also got some guys that were, I think, lost some value because they were seen as guys who were going to be traded. I think Alex Colome was there. People weren't necessarily sure if it was going to be him or Kelvin Herrera, but it seemed pretty clear towards the end of the offseason that it was going to be him with the save chances. So there was him. Will Smith was a guy who was discounted because he was going to be traded. And I think one of the things is guys like that who aren't on teams that are very good, who may not get the full season, I actually really like picking up guys like that because it gives you some certainty at the beginning of the season where you're not just like chasing saves and chasing saves. Because we all remember like Hunter Strickland going for or I guess that maybe that was last year, like, or no, I can't remember. Like whoever the closer was this year who started going for like 250, you know, like Jacob Barnes when Knebel went down or whatever it was, like, you know, where there's just these massive bids. You don't want to be in a situation where you feel that way. But I feel like the bullpen situation in a lot of cases, the way that there's a lot of uncertainty is actually an opportunity if you really do some deep diving on bullpen usage, skills, and you think about the context of what the incentives are for the team. So like an example would be this year for like the Angels, you know, Hansel Robles and Buttrey were kind of like there once Greg Holland lost the gig. And, you know, I had been watching to see what the usage was like, and it was pretty 50-50. But knowing that Buttrey's like a young guy, and so the incentives financially are for them to go with the guy who's already got like the big league contract in Robles, and the fact that Robles and Buttrey were both pitching pretty well, like Buttrey was going for a lot more. And so I put in low bids on Robles. I think I got him for like $8 in a bunch of leagues. And so like, that's an example where if it doesn't work out, then you just like toss Robles, you know, to the waiver wire. But if it does work out, it can really work out. And even with Liam Hendricks, like I think I got him for $30 or something like that in my league. People were down on Fab by the time he was going. And people were like, oh, well, Trinan will be back in a couple weeks. And so it wasn't necessarily sure. But if you looked at Hendricks's skills over the last like 15 games, I think I tweeted about it when he went on the waiver wire, like they were insane. Like they were just out of this world good. And so seeing that, like that's a risk that I'm willing to take. And so I think if you can get like that deep in the weeds on some of these bullpen situations, there's some real value to be had, that it's a lot harder to figure that out with like a starting pitcher or, you know, with it, with, you know, hitters, it's sometimes possible, but like, I just feel like closers, so much of the value is in the role as opposed to what the pitcher is actually doing, that by doing those types of speculations, like it's one opportunity to get value that doesn't exist in different places in the draft or on the waiver wire. And so I'm fine having a little bit of that uncertainty and then just speculate on a bunch of closers end of the season. Like, you know, like Shane Green, I didn't want to touch him, right? He was terrible, but he had the role. And a lot of times we say draft skill over roles, but he was going like around 230 in ADP. And it was like, ah, oh, well, like take a shot on a guy who might get you like a handful of saves and hope that the rest of your pitching staff can do well. But what we saw is like over a short period of time, like even Shane Green can be a good pitcher. And so that I think is my kind of takeaway, is not paying for closers and waiting a little bit longer, even missing out on that second, you know, second wave of closers and looking for some discounted guys, as long as I know that I'm going to be looking for some speculative ads throughout the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think like a big part of that is just knowing that to start, that when you're drafting, if the guy's got the job, the guy's got the job. So let's not critique him, because like most of us said, Shane Green can't pitch, so on and so forth. Well, he had the job, but he got the job done. So as bad as it is, and trust me, I'm one of the first to tell you I don't like Shane Green at all, and it proved me right in Atlanta. In Detroit, he pulled miracle. I have no idea. So there's a lot to be said about stuff like that. Going into this year also, I know there's a ton of talk about getting starting pitchers early, and I've talked about it on many shows how I've never been a guy to go too crazy on starting pitchers. In years past, I've slowly developed into it. TGFBI, round two, I took Garrett Cole. Round three, I took Carlos Carrasco. That sucked. I got a discount in round nine on Madison Bumgarner. I love that. People thought I was crazy then. At round nine, that was great. But look at the rest of my pitching. You know, Keuchel, Musgrove, Derek Holland, Samardzija, Merrill Kelly. It was the guys I rotated the rest of my rotation around. I picked up guys like Max Fried and a few others. But moral of the story is, I went Cole Carrasco early. Most guys had at least two pitchers. Most, not all, had one to two aces, quote-unquote, leaving the first round. I know you, for instance, you already talked about getting Cole and Snell right out the gate. You're a mega pitchers early guy, aces early guy, because it gets real murky after that. As Spore and the guys say, you get the glob after that, where it's really nasty. You have to get lucky and hit the Jack Flahertys, the Biebers, those kind of guys, and not get screwed over by the Bowers and some of the others. Now, when you're saying that you need to draft aces, can you elaborate on what differentiates you in having those big aces, what that does for your team?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that like in today's pitching environment, especially where like bad pitchers can be really, really bad, like I just think that having at least one ace sets you up really well. And in a lot of my teams, I went two aces, and sometimes it didn't work out, right? I drafted Sale, I drafted Bowers, and, you know, that's on me. Like, but actually that team, if Sale hadn't gotten injured, like, that team would have been in a lot better shape. It was actually, you know, after the mediocre start by both of those pitchers, like, having Sale injured was kind of the, I think, the death knell on that team. But the reason why I love going one ace, and I really love going two aces back-to-back to start, is that it really sets up your entire pitching staff, right? Like, everything that you do beyond that is gravy. As long as you can put together a slightly better than league average pitching staff on the whole, after you get like a really good ace or two really good aces, is it sets you up. And so like for instance, like heading into this year, I put together this, this spreadsheet, and essentially like what I did is I broke down the monetary value of each player, right? Like based on the projections. There's an awesome tool that Tanner Bell at Smart Fantasy BB puts together that made it super easy for me to do. So I created the monetary value, but then I was also interested, like I tried to figure out, okay, how much of what percentage of each category does a player's contributions in that category make? And essentially, like, the best starting pitchers, like, have the biggest impact overall on your ability to win a league. Like, you know, max, you know, heading in. So it's like the most that any one player, according to the projections heading into this year, could have on your team was 15.8%. Essentially, like, 15.8% of what of the value that you need to finish in the top 90% in each category. Like Mookie Betts, that's what he was projected to get, was 15.8%. And then for the pitchers, you had like Scherzer at 18.2%, Sale at 19.7%, DeGrom at 18.7%, Verlander at 15.4%, you know, so on and so forth. And so like they can just have a much bigger impact on your team because of the strikeouts that they provide, because of the stabilizing impact that they have on your ratios, like all of that stuff. You obviously need to hit on them. But I actually like having two because it allows you to be able to hit on only one of them and like have the other guy become a reasonably good pitcher like Blake Snell was. And again, like I don't want to base all of this just on one league, but like I really love that idea because I think it then allows you to go like hitter, 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 and then go after some of the like, you know, guys in like the 150 range in ADP, maybe pick up a closer during that period of time. But even with the closer, that then allows you to have closers that don't have the best ratios because you have these ratio foundations in your starting pitchers. Again, obviously it needs to work out. But like when I look at all of my teams that did like really well, you know, they all had an ace. And I think that's a lot in a lot of instances the case with some of the teams that finished higher up in the standings. And you know, and so I just think that that is so, so critical in today's game because I think we get caught into thinking like, oh, we're great drafters. We can see value. We can identify value. But the research that's been done by folks like Ariel Cohen and others shows that like those aces have the best return on their value. And so, you know, I'm big on aces, you know, even with my last point, because I'll talk and talk and talk, is like, even after Christian Yelich put together one of the best seasons in fantasy baseball history, you know, at least like from just like a overall stats angle, you know, so did Ronald Acuna. Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander finished $6 and $9 ahead of them, according to the auction calculator on Fangraphs, this year in value. So despite that, those two pitchers were able to actually be the most valuable players in fantasy because of what they contribute to their teams. And I think for that reason, and because there's this, like you mentioned, Paul Spohr says, like, there's this glob of pitchers that nobody knows really who's going to do that well. Like, you have some guesses, but it just, you know, for every Shane Bieber, there's a Joe Musgrove, right? And so for that reason, like, I'm really going to focus, at least in 15-team leagues, on going ace heavy. And it may be, depending on where I draft, that it's like, you know, if I draft towards the very front of the draft, it may be hitter, pitcher, pitcher, because I think there's going to be some decent guys that are left over. But I wouldn't be surprised if once draft time comes around, depending where he ends up, if Gerrit Cole isn't the number one player on my board, even if I have the first pick in the draft.
Wait, you would take Cole number one, or you just have him ranked number one?
I think I might be in a position where I would take Cole number one. over those other guys.
Wow. Well, this could be a discussion we can have later in the year, because I think I have a million questions on that now. But we can discuss that this offseason, because I think landing place will be a big part of that decision for you.
I hope you end up with your Giants, like I tweeted out.
No, that's not happening. It really isn't. If it happens, I would be thoroughly shocked, because it seems completely different than what they want to do with this rebuilding process. He's going to Anaheim. That's what makes the most sense. So we'll see. We'll see. That's an interesting one to discuss. But Cole number one,
I think he ends up back in Houston.
Well, that would be even better. Someone told me I was a fool for thinking that, and I was like, that makes the most sense to me. You know, DeGrom's got a couple years left. Greinke's got like a year. This gives you an ace for a while. It makes too much sense not to bring him back. But
I just feel like they're in such a good position with some of their hitting prospects where they can keep costs low by investing most of their money in there. And it's not like they're really a small market franchise, you know? And
I completely agree.
I just wonder if he takes a little bit less money to go to Houston, because like, man, I just see that team playing and they just seem to enjoy playing so much. They're going to continue winning a bunch. And I think in Anaheim, like, it's a little bit more of a question about like, yes, adding Gerrit Cole vaults them into playoff contention, but like, do you really think even with Cole that they win the division over the Astros? I mean, like, it's still a major question mark to me. So I think it'll be super interesting where he lands. I just really don't want Cole to end up with the Yankees. That's like,
no, that'd be miserable. Yeah, Yankees, Boston, any of those would be miserable.
Yeah,
that'd be horrible. Yeah. I'd love him to stay in Houston. The window is there for them to make quite the little dynasty there, like you said, with all the young hitting they have. You keep the pitching together like that, that could be freakishly good. Really good stuff there. So I'd be a big fan of that. Another topic you were discussing is don't pay for mid-range power. And I'm really curious about this, because I get the idea of you want big power bats, but in the bouncy ball era, it seemed like there really wasn't – it was hard to define mid-range power if you really wanted to, because there are so many 20-plus, so many 30-plus home run guys this year. Like in TGFBI, finished first in homers at 364 in our league. You know, Josh Bell, Matt Olson, those guys helped a ton with that. But what's your thoughts on this? I'm really curious to see what you mean by not paying for mid-range power. Like, what kind of guys are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm really talking about is guys who their major tool or like their calling card, at least after this season, is like 20 to 30 home run power. Like, there's just so many guys that are producing that if you get a profile of a guy who, especially somebody who hasn't really hit for a ton of power before, you know, so they may be hurt a little bit by the ball. Like, let's see, let me just like identify some guys. Well, like a good example would be, well, he's got a little bit of speed. Well, like Reese Hoskins, right? Reese Hoskins is a guy, he's not going to give you speed, right? He's not going to give you batting average. Like, what he's giving you is counting stats and the home runs. Like, essentially these three category contributors.
I see what you're saying now.
Yeah, guys like that. I mean, like, even guys like Daniel.
So, like, the power version of a rabbit.
Yeah, in some respects, but not like an elite power guy, right? Like, there's Pete Alonso. There's, like, Pete Alonso power, right? And then there's all these guys that are like between 20 and 30 home runs, you know?
Yeah,
so like, you know, your Luke Voigts of the world, your, I'm just going through the list of home run leaders. You know, just guys who are not.
Mike Yastrzemski's,
Who are not, just like, I'm doing a terrible job. Even guys like Hunter Dozier, who's like my guy. Right, like who's not going to be a batting average value or a stolen base value. I just feel like those guys are going to be so like you can find those guys as long as they're in a position where they're going to get plate appearances. And so valuation models should factor that in as you're thinking about them. But I just think that like, you know, like even trying to shy away from even looking at home runs like at that point in time, you know, because I just feel like there's so many guys that can produce that now with this ball that we have. And Jeff Zimmerman had a good article where he was kind of talking about what to expect. And like, based on news reports, it sounds like Major League Baseball is going to change the ball, but it sounds like the most likely time for that is 2021 and not 2020. And so they've done crazier things before, so it's certainly possible, but I think it's also like an insurance policy against them changing the ball, where like guys who have never shown power before who are now in like the 20 to 30 range, like if you don't have a ton of them on your team, then if the ball is turned back into a normal ball, like you aren't hurt as much, because those are the guys that really benefit a lot from like from the happy fun ball. So I don't know, it's not like a totally formulated thought yet, and I have to come up with better examples, but it's just making sure that more than ever, like you're looking to get guys who contribute in batting average or stolen bases, like one of those two things at least, until you get pretty deep into the draft.
No, I get what you're saying. Now, Sport and I were talking about this the other day. It's if, say, they change the ball back, it's like, okay, if you draft this guy and he has a 10 to 15% reduction in home runs, are you still okay? So the mediocre power guys you're discussing, that would hurt your team quite a bit. The big-time power guys, you'll still be just fine type idea. So yeah. I see what you're saying now.
Yeah, okay. And I think it's also like, I don't think that 15% just is a blanket statement on everyone. I think there's guys who
have enough power
where they don't need that extra oomph. But then I think there's a lot of guys who do need a little bit of that extra oomph. And that's guys that will fall in that kind of 20, 30 home run range who haven't really done it before, who haven't done it consistently with the different ball.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That makes a lot more sense. I was curious for a second there, because I'm like, you know, there's so many of these mid guys that do so much, but now it makes more sense what you're trying to say there. All right, any final thoughts on the season? There's a million things we could probably discuss, but I'm ready to hit the awards show unless you have any other thoughts.
No, we will have plenty of time to share draft thoughts moving forward, and I'll have better articulated kind of versions of these arguments that I'm making right here that aren't just like me responding with, you know, 24 hours since the season ended.
Yeah, no, it's all good. This is all just fun reflection, plenty of time this off season. And now let's do some awards. And there's so many ways to do this. This could be just flat out, you know, Ronald Acuña Jr. was just dominant this year. Or it was, hey, this guy gave us so much value, he deserves this award. There's so many ways to go with it. There's really not many wrong answers. Everyone can have their own opinion on who the best was. So that's what makes this fun. So we'll have some fun here. We'll talk about some awards. We'll do some All-Stars and wrap up the show. But your fantasy MVP, Toby, there's so many ways you can go with this. Who would your fantasy MVP be this season?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I considered a lot of players here. And what I'm really looking at in fantasy MVP is value. Like, who returned the most value over the course of the season for guys who were drafted late? Because that's really what wins you championships, right? So some of the guys I thought about, DJ LeMahieu, he was ADP of 312. From a evaluation standpoint, what did he finish at? He finished as like a close to $30 player, I think. And so he was a consideration. Ketel Marte was a consideration at ADP of 227 with the season that he put together. Marcus Semien was another one at ADP of 240. Jorge Soler at 313. Pete Alonso was at an ADP around 250. But I think if I had to go with one guy who would be kind of a fantasy MVP, I think that I am going to go with Ketel Marte. And that's because what pushes him over the top, like DJ LeMahieu was great. Like, he did an amazing job. I think what puts it over for me is the combination of batting average at 329, which is a very scarce category these days, and then the 10 stolen bases to go along with 32 home runs, 97 runs, and 92 RBIs. So not only was he providing incredible value, but he was doing so in the two scarcest categories. So I'm going to go with Ketel Marte, and I think Marcus Semien will be a close second for me. How about you?
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of those. I had many of those names written down. Pete Alonso, Marte, Semien, I had those three written down for sure. But I had a fourth one, and I'm going to take Jonathan Villar. He was drafted 76th. I was huge on him coming into the year. I have him in pretty much every league I could have him in that I didn't get sniped on him on. He didn't quite have the draft value, per se, that you guys might have had at some of his other picks. He did, according to the Razzball Player Rater, was 10th overall, averaging about $32.50 come season's end, which is crazy to think about when you think Ketel Marte, of all people, which is pretty wild. And then when you just look at his overall stats, he really – really brought it this season when it comes to steals. And the big thing was the power. Now, that could be the bouncy ball, like we discussed. But with Johnny VR playing in Baltimore, where he's going to be able to run like crazy, and we'll see where he's at. He goes back with him next year, probably gets traded. But, you know, he finished with a .274 batting average, which was outstanding. 24 home runs, 40 stolen bases. Getting that kind of production in, you know, 76 picks, so you carry the one. That's like late round five, early round six. Getting 40 stolen bases and 24 home runs with an average that doesn't kill you. He scored 111 runs, even drove in 73. I'm going to go with Johnny VR as my fantasy MVP.
Nice.
All right. Who is your fantasy Cy Young Award winner?
Well, how about that? I'll let you go first this time, Bubba. That way, okay. If we have the same one, I don't steal your
thing. It never matters if we have the same one. That means great minds think alike. Yeah. But the one I'm going with, and this is more to kind of say I screwed up and I'm a man of my maybe we'll talk about it more next week. But Shane Bieber, I'm going with him as the Cy Young. Like, Gerrit Cole to me is the real life Cy Young Award winner. If people pick Verlander, I get it. Totally justifiable. But when it comes to Shane Bieber, a guy that was drafted much later than people, like the hype train was there. End of draft season, he wasn't like super crazy, but like from March 1st to April 1st in NFBC, he went pick 126. So he got some helium. But you know, if you drafted in February, you got him at a discount. He finished the year worth almost $24, according to Razzball Player Raider. And what Bieber did is he shut me up, basically. He threw 214 innings. He made 34 starts, 15 wins, struck out almost 11 batters per nine, a 3.28 ERA with a 3.23 xFIP. Wasn't much of a fluke. And he was just pure dominant. I really didn't think he had the strikeout stuff to make it. Looking at some of his minor numbers, I didn't think it was there, but the swing and miss was there. He started locating more. We've heard Nick Pollock talk about it much better than I can. Paul Sport, two pitching gurus, can describe what Bieber did differently way better than I can. And it's all about location and just using the stuff you have to your ability, not just using it to, you know, like Nick Pollock talks about it a lot with Syndergaard. What bothers him the most is dominant stuff, and he almost starts pitching to contact when he doesn't need to pitch to contact. There's two different times. There's a time to pitch to contact and a time not to. Syndergaard doesn't do it right. Bieber executes it perfectly. And that's just the difference between the two. And Syndergaard does play a million times better than Bieber's. Bieber just knows how to use his. Like, he's like a modern-day Greg Maddux to me. Just this season, it could change a lot. But what I saw him do this year with the stuff he has, which is very hittable when he's off, was very, very impressive to me. Like, he still gave up 1.3 home runs per nine. So when he was in the zone, he got hit. That didn't change. His BABIP was much lower this year. That could be changed next year. But for me, I'll go with Shane Bieber. I had some other options there. I know some of them the same you had. I had Giolito. The other option was Lance Lynn. I almost gave it to Lance Lynn for what he did, for where you drafted him. But I'm giving it to Bieber. Who do you have?
Yeah, it was a tough one. I thought about Hyunjin Ryu at 175. I thought about Sonny Gray at 268. Both had just incredible, incredible seasons. But I have to go with my boy, and that is Lucas Giolito. ADP of 575. Finished up this year. He pitched like after April, like he was just absolutely dominant. And you know, nobody paid really anything for him, right? Like, he just kind of came out of the blue, and the skill growth that he had was just unbelievable. Like, he finished with a $19 season despite missing, you know, the last few weeks of the season and those struggles earlier on in the year. But that changeup is dominant. The slider's great. The fastball was one of the more dominant fastballs in baseball this year. I think it gained two ticks. So I think everything about him is real. And I think if you had him on your team, you essentially had an additional ace that you got off the waiver wire. And I was fortunate to have him in all three of my biggest leagues. And so I'm going to go with the homer pick of Lucas Giolito. There's plenty of very very deserving candidates, but that's going to be my fantasy Cy Young for the year.
Yeah, there's no arguing that one at all. He was, once he made that complete game shutout in Houston and took Twitter by storm and the world by storm, he was just a different man. Like, he had confidence out there. He kind of had a little swagger to him on the mound. Like, he was filthy. It was awesome to see, so I can't fault you there at all. Let's go Rookie of the Year. It was a fun year. Fun year for Rookie of the Year. You can't really go wrong here because most of them weren't taken too early to be called, you know, non-values. But there's a ton of good options here. Who is your Rookie of the Year?
My Rookie of the Year, I think Pete Alonso is kind of the obvious choice. And, you know, he probably deserves it. But going with my Ketel Marte theme, I think I was looking for the guy who contributed the most in some of the scarce categories. And so I actually am going to go with Fernando Tatis. And the caveat that I'll put in there is just considering what he gave you while he was healthy. So he gave you 317 batting average, 22 home runs and 16 stolen bases. And then when you factor in, you know, that he was out for a good chunk of the season, but that you get to add in a replacement value for his replacement. I mean, you're looking at, even with like a terrible replacement guy, you're looking at a 30-20 season. And for me, along with the high batting average, that's more valuable to a fantasy roster than what Pete Alonso. So Mets fans will probably hate me. And I know that Mets fans are really smart, so there's a lot of them that listen to this podcast. But I'm going to go with Fernando Tatis Jr. As my fantasy Rookie of the Year.
I think that's a great play. It's going to be fun to see where he goes in next year's draft. I think Eloy Jimenez was very viable, especially with the September he had. I think a sneaky one could have been Oscar Mercado. He was kind of the lost man in Fabapalooza, finished with 15 homers and 15 stolen bases. Getting that off the waiver wire, we talked about earlier strategy-wise, playing the wire and everything. You sneak a guy like Oscar Mercado that late in the year, that's tremendous. That's outstanding. So imagine what a full season of Mercado could do. But I'm going to take the easy way out. It's Pete Alonso for me. What he did, I didn't see coming. I wasn't a believer like everybody else was. 53 home runs. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I don't care, juice ball or not. That's game changing. That is absolutely insane when you really look at it all. He when you look at the player rater for Pete Alonso, he finished, I believe it was, I got it right here. He finished on 17th overall. He's worth almost $29. And then when you look at the NFBC, he, even in just March through April, he was still going to pick 202. So, like, the helium was coming, but they, not everyone was a believer. Like, they weren't all there yet on Pete Alonso pick that month. So I'll take the easy way out. I'll take Pete Alonso, but you can't go wrong with Fernando get hurt. What could have been with that man? And like, Another guy we didn't mention, Chris Paddock, dude was absolutely filthy. Like, he could easily have been on the list. There were some very good rookies.
Yeah, I actually had Mike Soroka as my fantasy pitcher Rookie of the Year. That's who I was going to go with. Probably mostly because I'm very biased against Chris Paddock, but Soroka actually out-earned Paddock, according to the auction calculator, at least, with that 2.68 ERA and 1.11 WHIP. And then the 13 wins was certainly helpful as well. But, yeah, a lot of, you know, not quite last year when it came to rookies, I think. But the game is in very good hands with the young talent that's coming up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's talk about some more achievers this year. Well, next week's the downer episode, so we'll do the upper episode right now. Let's go All-Stars. And there's, when you have this many good players, so many ways to go on this one. There's going to be so many we miss out on. And a lot of it probably will be homer-based because they had a big impact on what we did. So let's start out with the catcher's position. Who is your fantasy All-Star?
Well, you know, I play two catcher leagues mostly, so I am going to choose two folks here. And with the All-Stars, I'm going to bypass the whole value discussion, and I'm going to go with the players that I think were the best. And I'm going to go with JT Realmuto and Yasmani Grandal as my 1-2, and then an honorable mention to Mitch Garver and Christian Vasquez. What about you?
Yep, I love it. Realmuto would have been number one as well. I'm going to go Mitch Garver as my number two. Talking about a guy that came out of nowhere to basically lead, it was him and Gary Sanchez leading catchers in home runs. That's pretty crazy when you sit there and think about that coming into the season, that Mitch Garver was second on home runs. I don't think many people would have agreed with you on that one going into the year. So I'll take Realmuto and Garver.
Quick question. How many stolen bases do you think Yasmani Grandal have this year?
I saw this earlier, a couple weeks ago, so I'm going to have to, foreshadow 13.
No, he's way under that. He's at 5.
I thought he had double digits for some reason.
He's one of the slowest dudes alive, so that kind of gave him a little bit of a bump over Garver for me. But I had Mitch Garver, and I'm also, he was on the team that was right on my tail in the main event, and so I had a lot of nightmares that involved Mitch Garver down the stretch, especially because he was just crushing it. So that's a great pick.
Yeah, no, Garver was one of the surprises this year. Let's go to first base. I'm going to start this one off because this one was tougher for me than I thought it would be. Freddie Freeman was easy. I have to go Freeman. I think anyone that doesn't go Freddie Freeman, I would love to hear the argument behind that one because it was crazy. The second one for me, and I like almost everyone you put down there. Trey Mancini's near and dear to my heart. He was one of my massive value picks this year. I did not pick him, so I apologize to Trey Boo Boo. But my second first baseman, and it really sucks he kind of fell off in the second half, but I'm going Josh Bell. What he did in the first half, I know we need a full season. That would be great. The end of the season stats are still phenomenal. That's all that matters at the end of the season. If he could have put it together in the second half, what could have been? But I'm going to go Josh Bell. Give the boys some credit, but Trey Mancini is a good one. One of your other guys I have at corner infield, so I'll save that for later. Who are your first basemen?
Yeah, I went with Freddie Freeman for sure, and then Cody Bellinger. I have him at first base instead of outfield. Outfield is so deep, especially since we have a three-man outfield for our all-star team. And so with that being the case, if it was a five-man outfielder, I'd probably slide Bellinger into the outfield position, but I'm going to have Bellinger and Freeman as first baseman. Honorable mention to DJ LeMahieu, Pete Alonso, Jose Abreu, and your boy Trey Boo Boo Mancini.
Yes, Trey Boo Boo. I love that, man. Bellinger I got later on. I agree. If we want to add some more outfielders, we can to mix up because such a deep position. But let's go to second base. This is a fun one, and we have some similar ones here, I have a feeling, because it was some of the big boys are right here. Who do you have at second base?
All right, for second base, I have your boy, Jonathan VR, and then Ketel Marte as my other second baseman. An honorable mention to my 2020 love of my life, Ozzie Albies is my honorable mention there.
You know, Ozzie Albies quietly, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, had such a solid second half of the season. And it all correlated by moving him back to the top of the order. It was amazing what happened when you put him right behind Acuna. Because Swanson was up there until he got hurt. And then when Swanson came back, they kept Albies up there, and he tore it up. So that was a big second half. Hopefully he carries it over. But for me, I have Johnny VR. Obviously, I have to have Johnny VR at second. That's tough for me not to. But mine was one that I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it never did. And I'm glad it didn't because it shut up all the haters that said he could not hit outside of Colorado. DJ LeMahieu, who hit 327 on the year with 26 home runs, it was impressive. He only struck out almost 14% of the time. The dude was really, really good. Amazing player. I can't wait to see what happens with him this next year. So I'll go DJ LeMahieu at second base as well. Who is your shortstop?
Shortstop's so deep this year. I got to go with Trevor Story and Alex Bregman. Every inch, every ounce of my body wanted to go with Xander Bogaerts as one of the two, but I think those two are clearly just dominant players. But my honorable mentions go to Xander Bogaerts, Jonathan VR, Marcus Semien, and then Tim Anderson, who I think, a lot of people next year are going to be expecting some heavy regression, which I think they should. But I think that and his just terrible plate discipline may have them not paying the right price for a guy who, when healthy, is going to give you a decent batting average, even with heavy regression, in an improving lineup, and go 20-20. And I think there's a lot of value in that. So I just wanted to give him a little bit of a shout out at the shortstop position too. He's also a dominant bat flipper.
He's a great bat flipper. He should be, he should definitely be on team bat flip. There's no hiding that one.
For sure.
Probably one of the best bat flips out there. And I was so happy when I saw he won the batting title this season. 2 years ago in TGFBI, I took him with my last pick, and people thought I was crazy, and it still worked out well. I liked him this year, but with the depth of shortstop, it just didn't work out. I was on the In This League podcast early in the season with Bogman and the Welsh, and one of the guys we talked about, because Anderson got off to a hot start yet again, and they were asking me how I felt on him, and I've always been a big Anderson fan, so I was like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe the batting average comes down, but the power's legit. I still think he's like a 280 hitter. I'm like, oh, you're crazy. I'm like, no, he's not that bad. Like, people forget another guy, not going to say the same as Giolito, but it's the same concept that these guys were top prospects at one time. Some guys develop at different times. Like, we got to take that into consideration. Is he going to win a batting title next year? Probably not. Not many people do that back-to-back seasons. But like you said, if the price is right, because, you know, you got Amed Rosario, you got Jorge Polanco, you got a ton of good shortstops. Like you said, the position is deeper than ever. It's crazy how many shortstops are out there. So you're going to get Tim Anderson at a discount, and it's going to be fun to see what that discount is.
Definitely, yeah. And he had some some major gains, like almost over 3% increase in contact. He's cut his K rate. So even his projection now is like for a .276 batting average, which in today's game is well above
outstanding
league average. Yeah. So. Okay, all right, your shortstop.
My shortstop, I love the Bregman call. No problem there. I took him in Barf with one of my early picks. We talked about him on that February day, how much we both liked him and his upside, and his second half was killer. You know, the little man finished with 41 homers and hit .296. Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. But my main guy, and this might just be a bias to me, I've always loved him, and it finally came through. We've talked about him a few times on this pod already. But Marcus Semien is my all-star shortstop. 33 homers, .283 average, 10 stolen bases, 123 runs scored, and drove in 92. It doesn't even have to do with the value you got him drafting, which you talked about earlier. But I'll take Marcus Semien as my shortstop. I know it's a little different, but it's so deep, I can make arguments for a lot of these guys.
And one thing on Semien is the plate discipline, the metrics. Like, his walk rate and K rate are almost even.
Yep.
And then I think in the second half, he was probably close to having a higher walk rate. He was 12.7 to 14.2. Just incredible gains. I love that pick.
Yeah, and the way he was mashing, especially lefties, my gosh. It was awesome. Hopefully the wild card game should be fun with them and the Rays. Third base, who do you have?
So this was
I'm just going to say we have the same picks.
Okay. So let's get out of the way. Rafael Devers and Anthony Rendon are going to be my two all-star picks at third base. Honorable mention to Alex Bregman, but he's in the team at shortstop, so not as honorable. You know, Devers, he's not a guy I think that I'll own a lot of places next year. I just am not sure whether that speed that he showed earlier in the season is sustainable. It really fell off, and he was caught stealing a bunch of times towards the end of this year. So that I don't necessarily buy, but an incredible young hitter. And then Anthony Rendon, the heart and soul of my NFBC team. He just played well. And also my 20-team Real Fake Dynasty League that I have with Smata and Walter and then Max Fries. Max finished in second. He led he led that team to victory as well. So Rendon was a big part of my success this year. So I'm going to go with him too.
There's nothing wrong with Rendon. He was so damn good. I know that we'll talk about someone else in a little bit, and I'll bring the comparison up there. But Rendon was amazing. The Nationals are reportedly going to offer him 7 years, 210 mil, so 30 mil a year, which tells you exactly what they think. If we remember the free agent market this last year, 30 million a year is pretty darn good these days. Mm-hmm. So, they love Rendon. He's a beast. Keeps getting better and better. So I love both those calls. And the Devers thing, we'll talk about him more this offseason when we dig into these positions. I just really hope people aren't drafting him for stolen bases. Like, I'll expand more on that later, but you aren't drafting this little munchkin for stolen bases. Just remember that. Like, that's not the goal with this man. Like, people are going to see it, and they're going to think that you're not drafting him for stolen bases. Just whatever he gets for your stolen bases is gravy. Mine's Devers and Rendon, like you said. We'll go to middle infielder. I'll say mine real quick. It's actually two guys you already mentioned earlier. It's Ketel Marte. It's Trevor Story. Those would be my two guys there. You could have put him in there and flipped someone else down to middle infielder either way. But I know Story has great years. I always forget just how great they are until I look at his stat line. Again, 20-plus stolen bases yet again, 35 home runs, almost hit for 300. The dude's crazy good. And then, yeah, Ketel Marte, we've talked about him a ton already. He's a beast. It'll be fun to see where he goes next year. So who's your middle infielders?
Well, I could not have a team without Xander Bogaerts in it. Yeah. He ended up being a top 15. I think he was 15th, at least according to the auction calculator, in terms of value this year. So got to have him in the team. I made my middle infield spot pretty large with Ozzie Albies and Marcus Semien also filling it, just so that I could get them all into the team in some way, because I like to be inclusive. Those are my middle infielders, but led by Xander Bogaerts.
Yep, don't hate that at all. Corner infield, who are your two corner infielders?
So with this one, I am going to go with DJ LeMahieu, one of your first basemen, I believe. And then I'm also going to add Jose Abreu. We have not mentioned him, or I guess I mentioned him among the honorable mentions at first base. You know, man, out of nowhere he put together, I mean, not out of nowhere, but just when you look at the final stat line, you're like, I don't think I heard a single person talk about him. Finishes the year with over 30 home runs, led the AL and RBIs on a team with like no OBP threats in front of him, which super confuses me. Maybe Yoan Moncada, but he batted behind him for half of the year. And then Abreu is there, and he also hit over 280. I think he's a guy that'll be a good draft day. Hopefully be at a good draft day price next year. I expect him to be back with the White Sox, and I think they're going to be an improved lineup as well. Who do you have as your CI? Oh, go ahead.
Abreu is one of mine. I am a huge fan of his. That was one of my sleeper article picks this year. Because I think he's old and he's on the White Sox. So we will get him in a discount again next year. It will happen. It happened this year and shocked me, and we'll get him again next year. So huge Abreu fan. But my other corner infielder, somehow we have not mentioned him. He was a value pick, I guess sixth or seventh round in TGFBI. And he beasted out this season. Sadly finished on 49 home runs, but Eugenio Suarez is another corner infielder. 271, 49 homers, 87 runs scored, 103 RBIs. The dude does it year after year after year. And each year people think, no, it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. Well, he does it again over and over and over again. So as long as ballpark, he's going to be able to hit home runs like crazy. Eugenio Suarez, corner infield, all-star.
Nice.
All right. Outfielders, we have the same three in Acuna, Yelich, and Trout. Let's have some fun with it, if you don't mind shooting from the hip here.
All right.
You want to go three more outfielders that aren't those three and not Cody Bellinger?
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. All right. Give me. You go one. We'll go back and forth. One, 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 one.
Okay. My next one would be the childish Bambino himself, the love of Sammy Reed's life. Juan Soto has to be the next outfielder off the board. Or yeah, in our all-star team, I guess.
In all our star team, yes. If you took childish Bambino, I will take the free agent that's going to not be playing in Boston this next year in Mookie Betts. So give me Mookie. I don't know if you saw it, but Jared Karabas, who covers the Red Sox, he tweeted out a picture from a month ago for the season ticket plans for 2020, and Betts was one of the three players on it. And then the ones the Red Sox sent out like 2 days ago, Betts is not on the picture anymore. They photoshopped him out and put Eduardo Rodriguez in the same picture. So I think that says pretty much everything the Red Sox plan on doing this offseason. One thing is they're not paying for Mookie Betts, but he is an all-star for me. Who's another one for you?
What an absolute travesty.
Yes.
He should be a Red Sox for life. I mean, I like the Red Sox, you know. They're kind of my family's team. But You know, if they let him go, a young player in his prime, one of the, you know, from just an all around standpoint, three best hitters in the game. God, I don't know how you, I don't know how you can do that, but oh well.
All right. Who's your next one?
Well, this is, I feel like it thins out a little bit with our buddy, with our buddy Cody Bellinger off the board. I've already mentioned Ketel Marte as my second baseman. So there's so many different ways to go. Let me just look at one thing. This, you know, I think I'm going to have him up here. I'm going to have him as my all-star outfielder, partially because he deserves it because he had a phenomenal season. And partially because I'm just so damn happy that his manager and his pitching coach are likely, or his manager is definitely out and the pitching coach is probably likely to follow. No ill will towards them whatsoever. I just think that they were living in the past. And so I'm going to go with Starling Marte. 295 batting average, 23 home runs, 25 stolen bases, 97 runs, 82 RBI for a not very good Pirates team. I'm going to go with them. I won't say who I briefly thought about as well, but I just think that going back to batting average and stolen bases being the scarcest category, I think he just had a really quite remarkable season. And so I'm going to go with Starling Marte.
I love Starling Marte, always a value. So we'll see where that goes next year. Mine's going to be one that, you know, 265-ish average, doesn't do much else but hit home runs, but he set a Kansas City Royal record this year.
Yes.
I'm going to go Jorge Soler. He's a 24th player on the Razzball Player Rater, $26 value. He went like pick 265 overall. I'm going to give Jorge Soler an all-star nod this year.
Nice. That was the other guy I was thinking about. So I feel good that he got on our team as well. I feel very invested in these players and their success after this. Just a quick little bit on Jorge Soler's second half. In the second half, he had a 14.8% walk rate and a 23% K rate. He dropped his K rate from the first half down nearly 6 points and almost doubled his walk rate, which is insane.
That's pretty darn good.
And when you look at the skills, I mean, the skills, the plate discipline improved dramatically. The contact rate improved dramatically. Theo Epstein is really good at trading really good talent away.
Yes, he is. My goodness. Man, they give him all the credit for building the Red Sox teams and getting the Cubs a title. But, man, Gleyber Torres, Eloy Jimenez, Jorge Soler, the list goes on and on.
Right.
It's bad. It's bad. Who's your final outfield all-star?
My final I think that's five, right? Because we had our three and then we tacked on the other two.
All right. We'll leave it there then.
I'm not prepared to go any deeper than five.
Okay. That's fine. I'll have an honorable mention, Austin Meadows. Want to give him
Austin Meadows. That's a great call. Yeah. Great call. Yeah.
All right. Who's your utility? Yes, definitely. Who's your utility?
Oh, man. My util. I'm going to have to go with. This is tough. Who did I have in my util before? I had Soto and Betts as my utils heading into this conversation. We mixed it up a little bit. So I think what I'm going to do is put Marcus Semien at util. And that way I don't have a glut of middle infielders with Bogarts, Albies, and Semien. I just have two. And then Semien is my util. I'm going to go with that. But I think Jorge Soler would have been a really nice pick there too.
All right. I'm going to go with the 39-year-old wonder in Nelson Cruz. The util of utils.
Oh, man. I can't
believe that. Whoa, Nelly hit 311 with 41 home runs.
Oh, man.
Nelson Cruz, my all-star.
What a pick, Bubba. You just won. You just won the all-star competition with that pick. I didn't even have Nelly on my radar. Oh, man. I'm terrible.
41 bombs of 39-year-old.
Oh, geez. Great, great
pick. Util only.
Yeah. I just want to go back to something I just said about Jorge Soler's contact rate and his O swing. I lied. Over the second half, he did have a lower and higher, but they weren't that out of his 3-year range. And so I take back everything I said about him.
Oh, I agree. He's still a very good player, though.
So we're good. It's still amazing, good there. But I just didn't want to mislead any of our listeners into thinking that what I said was actually true.
It's all good. Let's talk starting pitcher real quick. Verlander, Cole, Flaherty, and Bieber, we all agree on. So that's 4 of the 6.
Wow.
We agree on those 4 there. You have 2 others. I have 2 others. Give me your first other one that we have. Like I said, Cole, Verlander, Flaherty, Bieber, we're both on the same page there, all stars. Who's your next one?
DeGrom. DeGrom's not on your list, huh?
No, I was very picky. Like DeGrom obviously deserves it.
Cy Young DeGrom. Wow.
I know.
Take away everything I said about your Nelly pick, Bubba.
Well, let's see what I have next. No, all right. So you got DeGrom.
Yeah.
I took Steven Strasburg. He threw over 200 innings this year. People thought he wasn't worth anything, and he gave everybody more than they could ever imagine from Steven Strasburg. So I'm going with Steven Strasburg, giving him some credit where no one else wants to give him credit.
Okay. I see that. All right. And my other guy was Chuck Morton, the most interesting man in baseball. I had to keep him on here. You know, I was struggling with that in a 5-man rotation. I was struggling between him and Bieber for my last slot here. And thankfully I was able to expand it to 6 starting pitchers to simulate our fantasy baseball world. And so Charlie Morton gets on there. Just an incredible season. The whip, the K's, the skills were strong. And just really anchored that Rays rotation when they really needed somebody to pick it up. So I went with Morton. Who is your number 6?
Yeah, I've got no problem with Chucky Morton. And it pains me as a Giants fan, but out of all due respect, Walker Buehler is my 6th.
Oh,
kid was amazing. I didn't think he'd take the next step to this level, like the consistency to this level. You know, almost 45 more innings pitched this year, increased the strikeout rate. The guy was great, absolutely phenomenal. So Walker Buehler is my 6.
That is a great pick. That is a great pick. I can't believe you left DeGrom out, though. So
I know.
The Mets fans are going to hate us. I left out Pete Alonso, and you left out DeGrom from your top 6. My God, we're going to be getting a lot of hate mail, a lot of hate tweets. And DMs.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, sometimes bad publicity is good publicity, so they can bring it on.
There you go. That's the motto of our podcast moving forward.
even if we're wrong and you hate us and want to talk about it, we'll take it. It's okay.
Yeah.
We have 3 relief pitchers: Josh Hader, Kirby Yates. We agreed on those 2. Those are good.
Hader and Yates.
The third one, I love your pick. Yeah, the third one, I love your pick.
I do too.
I want it. So what's your third one? Just because I wanted to differentiate, but what's your third one?
My third one is Liam Hendricks. You just probably heard a really big, loud bing in the background. That would be my computer. So Liam Hendricks, I didn't realize quite how incredible of a season he had. He was on my own darn really good team, and I didn't realize how good he was. 85 innings. 124 strikeouts, 25 saves in like half a season, it felt like. A 180 ERA, a .96 whip, even with a .311 BABIP. Just an 31% K-minus walk rate. 17% swinging strike rate. My God, that's good. All of it is beautiful. Needed to have him in the team for sure. And who's your third?
Yeah, I don't fault you for Hendricks. Like I said earlier with TGFBI, he helped me tremendously. But my third, and it's a guy that helped you tremendously this year, is just the Giants. He was outstanding, basically a K per inning, 34 saves, 2.76 ERA, 6 wins out of the closer position. I'll go Will Smith for a guy that basically wasn't drafted this year. Liam Hendricks wasn't drafted. Will Smith almost wasn't drafted. So we'll go that route.
Well, I cannot fault you for that pick. Will Smith was on a number of quality teams for me as well. And really, I mean, probably his best season to date with some of the numbers that he had. I mean, just absolutely incredible. And they said he was going to get traded. They said he was going to get traded, Bubba. But yep, we didn't believe
it. It goes back to your whole story of it goes back to your story. Just take the guys that have the job. You never know. Because that did factor into Will Smith's draft day value. People didn't want to play with the traded game. So and the Giants are supposed to be garbage. But a philosophy I've had forever in saves, give me the garbage closer, because if they do win 60 games, most of them will be close games. They're save situations. So roll that direction. But that'll wrap us up for episode 9, my friend. Any final thoughts as we wrap up the season? And we'll do more kind of looking back stuff here coming up. But this is, you know, like you said, we're around 24 hours, a little over 24 hours since the last out. Any final thoughts?
No, well, I just want to thank you, Bubba. I know we started out the Bubba and the Batfoot podcast 9 episodes again. I have thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you each Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, depending on when when power was going out and all of those things. But it's been a real pleasure. And just to the listeners, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast and listening to other podcasts that me and Bubba have put out throughout the year. It has been just awesome to get feedback from people about the podcast and to engage with folks. And I just hope that the podcast brought some value to you and your leagues. I hope your leagues ended up going well, and most importantly, that you had a lot of fun playing this beautiful, beautiful fake game that we play. How about you?
No doubt about it. I echo pretty much everything you just said there. So it's been awesome being able to do this with you and other shows that we've done, and it's good to see it's helping people out. That's all that matters here is we enjoy talking baseball and having fun playing this silly game called fantasy baseball. And if us talking about it and giving the 2 cents that we have on the situation helps you guys out, that's even better. So it's awesome they can do that. And before we sign off, I saw you tweeting about it quite a bit. Why don't you plug your fundraiser you got going on?
Oh, man. Well, that's really nice of you, Bubba. So for folks who have listened to my podcast for a while, I did an interview with my brother, Ethan, a while back. But he runs a nonprofit called Keep Playing Baseball. Keep Playing Baseball. The goal is really to provide equity and access to college baseball. Right now, it's super expensive to play all of the tournaments. And, a lot of kids like end up getting sucked into paying money to help with the recruiting process. And there's just a lot of money and a lot of gatekeepers in college baseball and baseball in general. And so his website is dedicated to providing access and information. He's a former D1 assistant coach and recruiting coordinator from USC, University of South Carolina, upstate. So he's got a lot of background in that, has always played baseball, and now he's giving back through his organization called Keep Playing Baseball. They have their annual dinner this Saturday, October 5th. And so I, through Batflip Crazy, am sponsoring the dinner at $500. And so I was just asking if anything that we've provided here on the podcast or in any of the free content that I've provided, at least, if any of that has benefited you and you've cashed out in some form, if you want to consider donating to Keep Playing Baseball, you can just go to my Twitter feed. There's information there. You'll see me retweet it. But just any type of donation would be great. And I'm trying to get the sponsorship level up to $750. So if we can raise $250 additional dollars, that would be really, really awesome. All of it will go right back to them providing more and more content. There's also amazing sports memorabilia on a silent auction that you can check out. Manny Machado signed baseball, Buster Posey signed baseball, Bryce Harper signed baseball, Ricky Fowler, if you're into golf, signed cleats. So all of that stuff is available. Just look at my Twitter feed. And thanks for the opportunity to plug that. Bubba, if you don't, if that's not your thing, Keep Playing Baseball, then just donate some money to some sort of nonprofit that supports work that you support in the community, because I think it's nice to to give back to the broader community in addition to just our fantasy baseball community here.
Yep, it's a great cause. Everybody go check it out. It's on his Twitter feed at Baffling Crazy. Lots of good stuff there. So most of you that listen to Toby have probably done pretty well. So give a little back. It's always a very, very good thing. But until next time, Toby's on Twitter at BetFlipCrazy. I am on Twitter at BetBDintric. If you give both of our podcasts some ratings and reviews, we'd much, much appreciate it. But again, until next time, this was Bubba and the Batflip, Episode 9. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.